Let's jump back to our phone lines real quick. We can recover, but thanks for bringing that up and reminding me there, Scott. Zach Harper covers the NBA for CBSSports.com and also Salt City Hoops is on with us. You can reach him on Twitter at TalkHoops is his call sign. Zach, thank you very much for joining us today. How's everything going?
It's great. This finals has been very easy to cover, and I don't know that we'll have too many more games. So,
what do you think's going on in the series here? I mean, is it over? Is it? Well, let me ask you this question before I have you answer that question. How many times have you changed your mind about who you think was going to win this playoffs, beginning back when Golden State had just come off their 73-win season? Everybody thought they were just going to go to the finals, no question. It's kind of gone up and down a little bit through the playoffs, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's gone up and down for sure. Going into the postseason, I felt pretty confident that the Warriors would win the championship. And then, Steph Curry sprains his MCL, and, they're not really bringing him back all that well, and he struggled, and then they go down 3-1 to the Thunder. And at that point, I definitely thought, okay, well, maybe this repeat isn't going to happen. And then they recovered, and once they got to the finals, I thought the Cleveland Cavaliers would put up a pretty good fight. I picked the Warriors in seven, but I didn't think it would be a blowout like this. But now, hindsight's always 20/20. Looking back at going into the series, it makes sense that the Cavaliers have struggled so much in the first two games.
Why does it make sense? Is it just because the East is so bad?
Yeah, I mean, the East is bad, but I think from a matchup standpoint, you have a Cavs team that is very good when they don't have a lot of adversity thrown their way, which a lot of teams can be. But with them, that's kind of why they marched through the Eastern Conference, because they didn't really get challenged except for two games in Toronto. With this Warriors team, the Warriors team is designed to really destroy everything this Cavs team excels at. This Cavs team is one that they look to get switches, and then they look to exploit those switches, whether it's in the post or whether it's one-on-one isolation. And that is exactly what the Warriors want you to do. Get a switch against us and then go out and try to exploit it. By the way, our help defense is going to eliminate all of that, and you're going to end up with a terrible shot. And that's what's happened in the first two games. I mean, we can blame LeBron, or we can blame Kyrie, or we can blame Kevin Love, or whoever, but really it's just a matchup problem. I think if they were facing the Spurs or facing the Thunder, they would have a much more competitive game plan to go at these guys. I think the Thunder would still give them trouble, but I think against the Spurs, maybe this even works.
Who's the most impressive player for you in these playoffs?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be Draymond Green, because he was in a situation, especially against the Thunder, when they're down 3-1. People are calling for his suspension for kicking guys in the groin. He wasn't playing all that well. His defense had struggled a little bit. And the fact that he's rebounded the way he has, and he's come back, and he's focused himself, and he's become – I mean, he was just dominant last night in the game to win. Everything he does, I mean, he puts a lot of pressure on himself by the way he plays, the things he says in the media, and he backs it up. And I think that putting that kind of pressure on yourself can feel unnecessary for a lot of players, but it motivates him, and he's really shined whether Curry's on the court or not.
So you hear a lot about him because he probably brings a lot of attention to himself. When he does well, he's praised really highly. When he does poorly, everybody lets him know about it, as we saw in the OKC series. But how about Klay Thompson? Is that guy...
He's been unreal. I mean, that guy, it's amazing that they have the greatest shooter of all time in Steph Curry, right? And then they have the next Ray Allen. And no one seems to care about the next Ray Allen, even though that's he's probably going to end up being the second greatest three-point shooter of all time. And the way he handled the ball and the way he handled the offensive responsibilities when Curry was out, and the way he handed it back in, like, he doesn't show any ego. He knows when the shots come to him, he'll take them. If they're not there, he's fine with it. His defense has been stellar on either Russell Westbrook or Kyrie Irving, whoever they throw out against him. He's just stepped up every single time and defended, really about as well as you can for a shooting guard defending a point guard. If Draymond Green has been the best player for them in the playoffs because of the Curry injury, Klay Thompson has been 1B or even right there with them.
Why don't people recognize Golden State's defense?
Because they're a jump shooting team, right? Like, that's all we hear is the 3-point shooting, the incredible passing, the fun offense. the way they run up and down the floor. You know, the offense is a spectacle, but the defense, I mean, they were the best defense in the league last season when they won the title, and now they were, I think, they slipped to like the fifth best defense. But a lot of that was because other defenses just got much better. You know, they're about the same as what they were last year, but they can switch everything. I mean, it doesn't matter who's on the floor for them. They will switch everything and know that the help's going to be there, and they play on a string, and they play with the confidence that I can be aggressive defending this guy on the perimeter because I know anyone behind me is going to back me up and the rotations are going to happen. That's why Draymond's so good. That's why Clay's so good. That's why Andre Iguodala's so good, is because they have the confidence in their teammates and they never have to question whether that guy's going to be there.
So is it the confidence in the teammate? Is it the switching? Is it the schemes? What is it that really makes them good?
I mean, it's everything. It's the fact that they, you know, we talk so much about on-court chemistry with teams and what that really means. It's not whether or not a guy likes his teammates. It's whether or not a guy can trust that his teammates are going to be where they're supposed to be. And it's just rare that the Warriors are out of position. Now, you may beat them. You may score on them, get to the basket, you know, hit a three-pointer in their face, do whatever, get to the free throw line. But that's not because that they've often had a breakdown in their defense. It's just because you got the better of them on that play, and they don't let that rattle them at all. That, I mean, it's the confidence and it's the persona on the court of, if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us doing the thing that's really hard to do. And if you can force even the best teams to go into that time after time, eventually they crumble.
What are they doing to LeBron that's causing him? I mean, he's not really playing that well. He's got a lot of turnovers that are kind of atypical. He's not able to really facilitate like he has against other teams. And he's not able to dominate in the scoring column. So they've kind of really neutralized LeBron James. What's been their secret to do that?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is they have guys that can, you know, do a good job against him one-on-one, with Iguodala, with Draymond Green, with Klay Thompson. Harrison Barnes has been a little bit of a mess against him, but still he's competed against him. So you have the personnel to go out there and compete on a one-on-one basis. And you saw it last night in the quarter they won, the first quarter the Cavs won. You know, LeBron didn't score, but he was passing the ball really well. He had like 5 or 6 assists. He was facilitating, and then they just kind of took away those passing lanes after that, and they did a lot of that by whenever they ran a pick and roll with LeBron handling the ball, the guy defending him, who was often Andre Iguodala, went under the screen. And the reason they're going under the screen is, for whatever reason, LeBron's jumper has been broken since he left Miami. I mean, it's really bad. Like, I mean, he can't throw anything up there and have it go in. And they're just daring him to shoot it. And when you go under the screen against him, you take away all those angles he can drive with. You can take all those passing angles away, and you just dare him to shoot. And he's not shooting the ball right now. And until he figures out either how to make them go over the screen or how to make them respect his jumper, it's just the same problems are going to persist.
So how many games are going to go?
I think Cleveland can get a game in Cleveland. I think we'll see at least one competitive game. Maybe they grab game 3 Wednesday night. But at this point, I would be shocked if it goes more than 5, just because Warriors are way better than they are.
Quick change of subject, the draft. The draft's coming up at the end of this month. Has anything changed, or over the last week or so, anything come up that's made people kind of wonder what's going on?
I think people are now confident, and maybe this was the case before, but they're really confident that the Sixers are going to take Ben Simmons with the top pick, and then that means most likely Brandon Ingram goes number 2, to the Lakers, and then from there, it's just chaos, because there aren't a ton of great players, at least on the surface, that, you know, someone will pop up over the next couple of years and we'll wonder, how did that guy fall? But, you know, whether it's Dragan Bender or Chris Dunn or I don't know, someone like Jamal Murray, like one of those guys is going to end up being the next star that we didn't really expect, and we don't know whether the Celtics are going to keep the 3rd pick or they're going to trade it. We don't know, you know, how many teams in the top 10 are going to try to trade out of that and get a veteran, or hope that someone else will try to trade up just to grab a Murray or a Buddy Hield or a Dragan Bender or whomever. And so once we get to draft night and the number 2 pick happens, I think we're going to see absolute chaos with trades because of the money available this summer. I think you're going to see a lot of teams taking big swings at trying to get deals done, because the free agent class kind of sucks. After Kevin Durant, there's not a lot there, and I don't think a lot of teams are going to know how to spend that money.
Hmm. Talk to us about our Ute, Jakob Poeltl. See, last I read that there was talk about him coming to the Jazz. I don't know if that's realistic, considering they already have Rudy Gobert. What do you know about Jakob, and where do you think he ends up?
I don't think he'll have a chance to go to the Jazz, because I think he'll go in the top 10. You know, he's He seems to be mobile enough. He seems to have the skill set. I think there may be some questions about defense at the next level, but I think he's a, you know, kind of a project big man. You know, he's not a raw project, but he's a guy that maybe a couple of years in the league, you look at and wonder, you know, can this guy be your anchor on both ends of the floor? And I think there are some teams willing to take that risk. You know, whether it's someone like Denver, whether, you know, maybe the Kings freak out at the idea of not being able to keep DeMarcus Cousins, they try to put him next to Willie Cauley-Stein. I think you could really have a lot of interesting pairings with Jakob at, you know, at the five position, and have a center move to the four and try to play big, because I think that's probably going to be the next wave. Is all these teams are trying to play small. Well, if you can go get a big man and play big and eat up the board, then that may be the way to slow down all these small teams. And he's kind of the perfect candidate to help with that.
I love the counterpunch. You know, everybody comes out with their first thing. We're going to do this. We're going to go small. And then the counterpunch always catches up. Very interesting. One last question. Is Andre Miller finished? Or is he going to play until he's 105?
I don't know that he's ever going to be finished. Whether he's playing in the NBA or he's at, you know, whatever local YMCA, he's going to play basketball until he's about 70, 75, him and Jamal Crawford. So I'll never believe they're retired until they're not there the next season.
Well, that's Andre's a hero. That guy's incredible. He's played so long, and he does such great things. But appreciate you coming on with us, Zach. Follow Zach at Talk Hoops on Twitter, CBSSports.com. He's an NBA, covers the NBA for CBSSports.com. Thank you very much, Zach. Appreciate your
Thanks,
insight.
Anytime.
Okay, take care.